when you begin to teach your body emotionally what it feels like, your body begins to believe that it already has it because you're emotionally embracing it. Then you're less likely to force outcomes, control outcomes, fight for outcomes, because you feel like you already have what you're looking for. And when you're in that state, you take your foot off the gas, and now all of a sudden, you start having very profound experiences, synchronicities, serendipities, opportunities, doors opening, because you're in a different state of being.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike Dizio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike Dizio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
Good afternoon and welcome to our podcast. We are so honored to have Dr. Joe Dispenza here today. Dr. Joe is an international researcher, speaker, and teacher who has taught in over 32 countries on 5 different continents worldwide. He works to help people tap into their greatness and maximize their potential. Along with numerous best-selling books, he teaches online teleclasses and workshops, hosts a variety of empowering seminars, and does corporate consulting. Dr. Joe's research intersects the latest findings from the fields of neuroscience, epigenetics, and quantum physics with the science of spontaneous remission and healing. His teachings and research have empowered hundreds of thousands of people worldwide, and I'm excited to get into our topic today, how to reprogram your behavior. But before we get started, I just wanted to ask you personally, what brought you into this field? What made you so passionate about conducting this sort of cutting-edge research?
Well, I think for some of us to wake up, we need a wake-up call. And in 1986, I was in a triathlon in Palm Springs, California, and I was on the biking portion of the race. And there was a police officer on the corner that was instructing me to turn. And I was passing 2 bikers on the corner. And when I made the turn, there he had his back to the oncoming traffic. So a 4-wheel drive Bronco going about 55 miles an hour catapulted me out of my bike.
Wow.
And I wound up breaking 6 vertebrae in my spine. And I had bone fragments on my spinal cord. I had the neural arch of the 8th thoracic vertebrae broken. And I was in trouble. And I had some motor function and neurological functions that were limited. And so... So the normal procedure in something like that is a radical surgery where they take off the back parts of your vertebrae and screw in these rods called stainless Harrington rods that are stainless steel rods. And for me, after 4 opinions from 4 of the leading surgeons in Southern California, they all said Harrington rod surgery, I decided to go against the surgery and see if I could heal myself started my journey on this whole adventure. And then after that, I got back on my feet in 10 weeks, and then I was training in 12 weeks. And then I started studying spontaneous remissions, people that were treating conventionally or unconventionally, getting sick, and all of a sudden they got better. And I wanted to know what the cause was that produced that effect. So I wrote a book called Evolve Your Brain, and then What the Bleep came out, and then I wrote a second book. And then I think it evolved into more about the how-to. In other words, if it helped people, well, if I found out what the things were that were in common that people had spontaneous remissions, could I teach it? Could I reproduce the model? So that's when the how-to started coming into it. And so we've made some really great strides in the last 10 years and just in discovering what's possible for human beings.
That's incredible. That's a great story as well. So to dive right into everything, I've heard a quote not too long ago, and it said, genetics loads the gun and environment pulls the trigger. And I sort of feel like it's more our perception of the environment that pulls the trigger. And I wonder if you have any comments to add around that, or if you can explain some of what that might mean and what your take is.
Sure. I mean, let's start with genes. Genes are like Christmas tree lights. They're turning on and off all the time. And your body in itself is a protein-producing machine. Mm-hmm. And proteins are responsible for the structure and the function of your body. And proteins, the expression of proteins literally is the expression of life. So science used to say that genes create disease. Well, less than 1% of the people on the planet are born with a genetic condition like Tay-Sachs disease or sickle cell anemia or type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. The other 95 to 99% is from lifestyle and behaviors. So what we found out is that the science began to say that it's the environment that signals the gene. And yet, you could have two people working side by side in the same factory, both exposed to the same carcinogenic chemical. One gets cancer and the other doesn't. So then there must be some internal order that is also the outer environment of the cell. So think about this. It's a, if science says the environment signals the gene, the end product of an experience in your environment is called an emotion. It's our emotional reactions to the environment that tend to select and instruct different genes to make different proteins. So once you have an experience in your life that causes you to feel pain or sadness or guilt or shame or anger or fear, most people are defined by that emotion. And then those emotions tend to drive their thoughts. Their thoughts then produce the same chemicals for them to feel the same emotions. And those emotions influence their same thoughts. And they get caught in these loops. Now, the body is the unconscious mind, and it doesn't know the difference between an experience in your life that creates an emotion that you're creating by thought alone. So the body's believing it's in the same environmental condition 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, because the same emotion is still affecting the same cell, and now we're headed for a genetic destiny. So then can you teach people then how to signal the gene ahead of the experience? And the answer is yes. By combining a clear intention with an elevated emotion, not fear or anger, hostility or guilt or shame, but instead gratitude, joy, freedom, and the love for life, is it possible then that that person can begin to regulate that state and knock on the genetic door, turn on a new light, turn off an old light? That new light makes a new protein. The protein is responsible for the structure and function of the body. And all of a sudden, the person has some type of biological change. And the answer is yes. We've measured it enough times to tell you that that's absolutely possible.
Incredible. Thank you for that amazing explanation. Just to take from that, so what you are saying is that literally, if we are setting an intention for our lives and choosing our thoughts and how that impacts our emotional state, we are directly impacting how our genes express themselves.
Exactly. So let's create a contrast. Mm-hmm. People wake up in the morning. They come back to their senses. The first thing they do is they start thinking about their problems. And those problems are connected to people and places at certain times in their life. And those problems produce emotions like unhappiness or sadness or anger or frustration. Mm-hmm. So the brain is a record of the past. It's an artifact of everything you've learned and experienced to this moment. Feelings and emotions are the end product of the past experience. Mm-hmm. So how you think and how you feel creates your state of being. So most people, they wake up in the morning and their entire state of being is in the past. So they're going to show up predictable in their life. Their past is literally going to be their future, and their future is going to be more of their past. So then how do we get out of the biological past and into a new future? When you combine a clear intention, a vision, a new possibility in your mind, and the thought in your mind literally becomes the experience. The end product of the experience is called an emotion. You should start feeling inspired, enthusiastic, overjoyed. Mm-hmm. And when you combine that clear intention with an elevated emotion, your brain and body move from living in the past present reality to living in the future present reality. And now you're in a new state of being. The act of repeating that enough times
creates that pattern.
Right. It begins to install the neurological hardware in your brain and begins mm-hmm. to condition your body no longer into the past, but now into the future. And now you're in a new state of being. And a new state of being is a new personality. And a new personality is connected to a new personal reality.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And so I think a lot of people I notice are sort of on autopilot, or they're identified with their thoughts and their emotions. It's almost like we are just sort of the product of our environment from the past. What advice do you have for how we can start to notice our thoughts, start to set these intentions, and start to break out of these patterns or routines or programs?
These are good questions.
Thank you.
So think about it. Most people think about 60 to 70,000 thoughts in one day. Mm-hmm. Out of those 60 to 70,000 thoughts that you think in one day, 90% of those thoughts are the same thoughts. So if you believe that your thoughts have something to do with your destiny, and 90% of the time you're thinking the same thoughts, your life is going to stay the same, because the same thoughts lead to the same choices. The same choices lead to the same behaviors. The same behaviors create the same experiences. The same experiences produce the same emotions. Those same emotions begin to drive up your thoughts. And so now your biology, your neurocircuitry, your neurochemistry, your hormones, and even your genetic expression stays the same. And there's a principle in neuroscience that says that nerve cells that fire together wire together. Mm-hmm. So you keep that pattern going extensively, you begin to hardwire your brain into a very finite signature. Mm-hmm. That finite signature, that box in the brain, by the time we're 35 years old, becomes our identity. A set of memorized behaviors and emotional reactions, unconscious habits, beliefs, perceptions, language, even our attitude functions like a subconscious program, computer mm-hmm. program. Yes. So now 95% of most people are memorized states in which they've done something so many times that the body now has become the mind. And once the body becomes the mind, now we're in a habit. And when we're in a habit, we're on autopilot and our body's dragging us into a predictable future based on what we've done in the past. And we've lost our free will to a program.
Absolutely. And then we get into like a state of learned helplessness, right? Exactly. And so just to make this really clear as well for people who are going to be watching this, let's say we could use an example of this. So if you grow up and you felt, let's say, trapped and helpless and powerless, and that was sort of your conditioning in your environment, or at least what you perceived in your environment at that time, does that mean that we are just going to be replaying that state over and over again of feeling trapped, helpless, and powerless? Or what other examples do you have to really clarify this for people watching?
Okay. Well, it's really simple. Let's answer it on two levels. The first level, when we have highly charged emotional experiences in our life, okay, mm-hmm. the stronger the emotion we feel from the experience, the more altered we feel inside of us. Yes. The more altered we feel inside of us, the more we pay attention to what's causing it outside of us. And in that moment, the brain takes a snapshot. Mm-hmm. That's called the memory. Yes. And so then we tend to think neurologically within the circuitry of that experience, and we tend to feel chemically within the boundaries of those emotions. Mm-hmm. So then the person then is trapped by their own biology. They're conditioning their body more into the past, and they're firing and wiring those circuits more into the past. So now the person with their 5% of their conscious mind wants a new life, wants to change, but their body has been conditioned into the known, into the familiar. Absolutely. So some people would rather hold on to their resentment, their regret, their guilt, their shame, and step into the unknown, because the unknown, you can't predict it. It's scary. It's uncertain. So people cling to what they know, not consciously, but mostly unconsciously, because they're now caught in a pattern.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So then the hardest part about change is not making the same choice as you did the day before. And the moment you make that choice, get ready, because it's going to feel uncomfortable. Absolutely. It's going to be unfamiliar. Now you're in the unknown. And most people, if they're in the unknown and they can't predict their life, the body, which has been conditioned to be the mind, starts sending signals to the brain. And you start hearing these voices in your head saying, start tomorrow. It's too hard. You know, you'll never change. You're too much like your mother. And you accept that thought as if it's true. That thought will lead to the same choice, which will lead to the same behavior, which will create the same experience, which will produce the same emotion. And the person will say, this feels right. No. That feels familiar.
Comfortable.
So going from the old self to the new self is the neurological, the biological, the chemical, the hormonal, the genetic death of the old self. Yes. And that place, that unknown, we have to reframe our thinking, is the perfect place that you want to create. So the next question is, what thoughts do you want to fire and wire mm-hmm. in your brain and put your attention behind? What behaviors do you want to demonstrate in one day, in one lifetime? The yes. act of closing your eyes and rehearsing those actions, yes. planning your actions, when the brain is truly present, doesn't know the difference between what's going on out there and what's going on in here, you begin to install the neurological hardware in your brain in preparation for the experience. Now the brain's no longer a record of the past. Yes. Now it's a map to the future. And if you keep firing and wiring, the hardware becomes a software program, which means you may just start thinking like an abundant person. You just may start acting like you're more unlimited. And then the tough part, can you teach your body emotionally what that future is going to feel like before the event happens? And if you keep instructing the body emotionally over and over again, you're going to begin to realize you're not going to wait for your healing to feel wholeness. Mm-hmm. You're not going to wait for your success to feel empowerment. You're not going to wait for your wealth to feel abundance, or the mystical moment to feel awe, or the new relationship to feel love. That's the old model of cause and effect, waiting for something outside of us to give us relief from the emptiness or pain we feel inside of us. But when you begin to teach your body emotionally what it feels like, your body begins to believe it already has it, because you're emotionally embracing it. Then you're less likely to force outcomes, control outcomes, fight for outcomes, because you feel like you already have what you're looking for. And when you're in that state, you take your foot off the gas, and now all of a sudden you start having very profound experiences, synchronicities, serendipities, opportunities, doors opening, because you're in a different state of being.
Absolutely. That's amazing. And it's funny because I've heard of tools like auto-suggestion, where you can sort of lace like repetitive thought with emotion to sort of reprogram that subconscious comfort zone. And in that case, how important, you just said we have to teach our bodies how to actually feel that imprint of emotion. How important is that part? I think we just think, oh, it's all in the mind. How important is that part? And how is it impacting us?
No, I mean, it requires the mind and the body, because the mind and the body is a new state of being. So you could say, I'm wealthy, I'm healthy, I'm healthy, I'm healthy, I'm healthy, I'm unlimited, 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 but your body's been emotionally conditioned.
No,
your body's negativity, fear, or lack of unhappiness. That thought stops at the brainstem. So you will only accept, believe, and surrender to the thoughts that are equal to your emotional state. And you will not believe and surrender to any thoughts that are not equal to your emotional state. So in our training, where we train people how to open up their heart, we train them how to feel gratitude, how to sustain an emotion like appreciation, a joy for existence, a love for life. And they trade guilt and pain and suffering for joy, freedom, and gratitude. And if you keep doing it over and over again, it gets easier and easier to cultivate those states. So then if you're feeling gratitude, as an example, the emotional signature of gratitude means an event has already happened. You give thanks when you get something. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling gratitude before you start your creation, you're going to accept, believe, and surrender to the thoughts equal to that emotional state. And now you program your autonomic nervous system into a different destiny, because you're suggestible to the information equal to your emotional state. And this is the key where people begin to make very significant changes.
That's incredible. And do you think we're addicted? Like, is there a part of us, we talk about comfort zone, but do you think that we're addicted to those thoughts that are creating those negative emotions, for example?
Okay, let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. Because when you react or respond to some threat or some condition in your life that's unpredictable, that you can't control, or you have the perception that could possibly get worse, mm-hmm. you turn on a primitive nervous system called the fight or flight nervous system. The moment you turn on that fight or flight nervous system, you're in survival. And living in survival is living in stress. And stress is when your brain and body are knocked out of homeostasis. Mm-hmm. It turns out when the body gets a rush of adrenaline and those survival chemicals, the brain and body get aroused. Mm-hmm. And people begin to become addicted to that rush of energy. Yes. So they use the problems and the conditions in their life to reaffirm their addiction to that emotion. So they need the bad relationship. They need the difficult situation. They need the traffic. They need the poor relationship, because it makes them feel alive. Now think about this. Human beings can turn on the stress response just by thought alone. They can think about their problems and turn on the same faculties as if you're being chased by a predator.
Yeah.
So then think about it. If the hormones of stress are addictive, and you can turn on the stress response just by thought alone, then you can become addicted to your own thoughts.
Yes.
And if you're using the problems and people in your life to reaffirm your addiction to some emotion, then you become addicted to the life you don't even like. And it's a scientific fact. It's a fact that the hormones of stress push the genetic buttons that create disease. And
wow.
If you can turn on the stress response just by thought alone, it means your thoughts can literally make you sick. So if your thoughts could make you sick, is it possible then that your thoughts could make you well? That's the fundamental question.
Absolutely. And so if our thoughts can make us well, is this back to just setting the intention? You know, how important is something like meditation in really changing this paradigm for ourselves?
Well, we've proven this to be the absolute case. So when you change the way you think and the way you feel, you change your state of being. So we took 120 people, mm-hmm. and we measured their cortisol levels, their stress hormone levels, and we measured a chemical in their body called immunoglobulin A. Mm-hmm. IgA, the primary defense in your body against bacteria and viruses. It's better than any flu shot. It's the body's natural defense system. It kills bacteria, it kills viruses, it kills molds, it kills funguses. It is the internal defense system. So if you're living by the hormones of stress and your cortisol levels are up and you're mobilizing all this energy for some threat in your outer environment, you have no energy in your internal environment for long-term building projects or growth and repair, because you're in emergency. Mm-hmm. There's a war out there. There's no homeland security because you're sending all the troops. immune system gets compromised. So I said, okay, let's take 120 people and let's teach them, instead of feeling anger and resentment and fear and impatience and frustration and sadness and pain, they're all derived from the hormones of stress. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just teach them how to feel love and gratitude and joy and freedom? And let's measure their heart when they're doing it properly to make sure they're creating that state so we can get feedback.
Yes.
So cortisol levels were high when they came in, IgA levels were low. Mm-hmm. 4 days later, just by opening their heart and creating an elevated emotion and combining it with a clear intention, their cortisol levels went down about 17% and their IgA levels went up 50%. That means they turned off the gene for cortisol and they turned on the gene for health and regeneration in their body in 4 days. Now, if a pharmaceutical company had a drug that could do that, it would be on every commercial all the time. And yet our nervous system is the greatest pharmacist in the world. So we're teaching people to disconnect from their outer environment and to go within, to sit their body down and get beyond the feelings and emotions of their body and their sensations of their body and get beyond their schedules and time. And that's what meditation does. It allows your inner world to start to become more real than your outer world. And it's a skill.
Beautiful. That's incredible. And I just love these statistics to really prove this, because we hear all this talk about these different things in personal development communities, but it's like you have the real evidence to support this, to really influence people's perceptions and behaviors.
So I have some really exciting news, and it's that integrated attachment theory training is back. In other words, you can be trained to become a relationship coach certified in integrated attachment theory in literally 60 days. So who is this for? Well, of course, this is for any individual who wants to make an impact and really be of service to others while also obtaining freedom and flexibility and abundance in their lives. And this is also for anybody who's already a counselor, a therapist, a coach, and just really wants to expand their toolkit. We've had so many people enter into the Integrated Attachment Theory program because they're just looking to obtain a certain degree of mastery in terms of understanding their own attachment patterns and also the attachment patterns of maybe their children or partner or other loved ones in their lives, so they can really support those people and understand them more deeply. Now, please keep in mind that the last two times we ran this program, we filled up very fast. In fact, we oversold the programs and sold up completely. So if you're interested, click the link below to learn more and dive in with me. And I'd love to see you on the other side before seats run out.
I've actually heard you say in a talk that you did once that there was a journal published, I believe in Scientific America, that said over 50% of our memories from the past are incorrect. They're just wrong. And can you talk about this for a second? Like how, so where you said that our memory, because it's all colored with emotion, it's creating so much of our lives. How is this impacting us?
Well, it's really funny because there's some great research on memory right now. Mm. And they're basically saying that memory is creative. Because we don't have the same brain that we had at the time of the event.
Oh, wow.
So they're finding out that 50% of what people talk about in their past aren't even the truth. Now, we know what that means, that people are reliving a life that they've never had. So what people do is they feel unhappy, they feel bitter, and then they associate that emotion with some experience that's happened in their past. But they actually embellish that experience to reaffirm the emotion that they're having. They need a little bit more of that emotion, a little bit.
That addictive, yeah.
Yeah. So now they need a little bit more to wake up. So people that are telling stories, narratives about their past that aren't even the truth. And my theory is forget about the event. Mm-hmm. Overcome the emotion. And the memory without the emotional charge is called wisdom. And that's the name of the game. You never talk about your past and complain about it when you're happy and your life is working.
Absolutely.
It's huge evidence then that when you're unhappy, you're in your past. And so how do you teach people to drag their brain and body out of the past? I mean, that's the work. And my interest in why I wrote Becoming Supernatural is because I wanted to show people that how powerful they really are and give them the evidence to show them that they don't need something outside of them to change how they feel inside of them. They can do it by thought alone. And when you do that, you become more empowered and your life begins to change. So think about it. So most people react to people and conditions in their life. And then you say, why are you unhappy? Why are you sad? And why are you this way? And they'll say, I am this way because of that person or that thing outside of me, which means
give my power away. Yeah.
Exactly. How does that happen? Let's break it down. The stronger my emotional reaction to you, the more I'm going to pay attention to you.
Yes.
And if where I place my attention is where I place my energy, I'm giving my power away to you. And now my energy is commingled with your energy and I have no energy to create a new life. So then lower the volume to the emotion and begin to take your attention off that person or that condition. You break the energetic bonds and that's available energy coming back to your field that you can design a new destiny with. And we've measured that too. So then the moment you start creating now and you're no longer a victim to your life, someone outside of you is doing it to you, mm-hmm. and you start changing the way you think and the way you feel by combining a clear intention with an elevated emotion, and all of a sudden you start to have these synchronicities and opportunities and coincidences happening in your life, you're going to begin to pay attention to what you did inside of you to produce that effect outside of you. And now you've just gone from being a victim to remembering that you're the creator of your life. And if you keep doing that enough times, you turn that battleship around.
Absolutely. This is just incredible information. So what do you think about, you know, and this might be sort of a difficult question to ask, very opinion-based, but what do you think about depression and anxiety? Like, what about somebody who says, oh, you know, I've been on antidepressants for 20 years, I'm stuck here. What would you tell somebody, given all the research that you've done in this?
Well, we have thousands of brain scans of people that have healed themselves of anxiety and depression. Now think mm-hmm. about it. Anxiety is picking the worst possible scenario in your future.
Yes.
And then thinking, I could actually make it worse. What if this happens? What if that happens? And when the survival gene is activated, we always pick the worst case scenario in our mind and we begin to emotionally prepare for it, because anything less that happens, there's a better chance of survival because we're prepared.
Yes.
So in survival, out of the infinite potentials in the quantum field, we're going to select the worst possible scenario and begin to emotionally embrace it with fear or anxiety. Combine that intention with the emotion over and over again, you start the conditioning process and you condition the body to subconsciously become the mind of anxiety and fear. It's not just in the brain. It's in the body. So then the person has a panic attack or they lose control and they notice a change in their internal chemistry and they look around to see what's causing it outside of them. Oh, it's a shopping mall.
There's no context for it. Yeah.
Exactly. So then the person's worried about their next panic attack because they lost control. And now they're caught in a loop. So
yes.
Anxiety then is obsessing about the worst thing that could happen in your future. And depression is continuously revisiting the past. And so you keep bringing up that past bitter memory that's tattooed in the recesses of your gray matter, and you begin to emotionally bring up the emotions associated with it. Your body's believing it's in the same past experience. Keep the process going. You're conditioning the body into the past. You condition the body into hopelessness and powerlessness, and you say, come on, let's get up and go. And the body says, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm conditioned into believing that my life is terrible because it's conditioned into the past. So, but when we break this pattern with people, we teach them that how to fall in to the generous present moment. We teach them how to remanage their attention and their energy back to the present moment. And you can't be anxious if you're in the present moment.
Absolutely.
You can't be depressed if you're in the present moment. And it's so funny because anxiety and depression are bedfellows. You know, they're bedfellows. So many functional brain scans show that most people have anxiety have depression. Most people have depression have anxiety. It's just a different side of the same coin. So then teaching people how to really fall into the present moment in the work that we do and the meditations we've used. We've had so many people break free from the chains of those limitations, and the side effect of that when they get beyond those emotions is joy. And that's the natural state of being.
That's amazing. I think that just gives so much hope to so many people that might feel stuck or trapped in that space. So it's beautiful. So you have a book. It's coming out October 31st, and it's called Becoming Supernatural. What would you say? I know the theme of it is how common people do uncommon things. And what would you say were three of the most important or empowering pieces of research that came up as you were researching and preparing to write this book?
I think the first thing is some of the brain scans that we've gotten. We've had so many supernatural measurements now that show people that they can tap into a resource of energy that will literally blow their mind. And when I say blow their mind, I'm saying that in a very literal sense. We're capturing brainwave patterns, mm-hmm. and the amount of energy in the brain pretty much has never been recorded in the history of neuroscience. And we're talking about hundreds of times the amount of energy in the brain when a person connects that field of information called the quantum field. And the arousal in the brain that's created is becoming a pattern, which we can see. We could actually predict it, and we can induce it, and we can see people that are going to fall into this place. So we've gotten some really powerful measurements in the brain, where the brain is in what's called high gamma brainwave patterns. A person is super conscious, and they're having a profound experience. I think that's important, and it's replicatable now. So
that's incredible. And just to clarify there, I have a question. Is that similar to being in a flow-like state, or is that something completely different?
Well, I mean, when you're in that state, you're certainly flowing. But we're talking, you know, you see little spikes of gamma in people that are in the zone. But we're talking global gamma in the brain. We're
like
talking
the totality. Wow.
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. If you took a measurement of 100 people and you were measuring their eyesight, as an example, you would see this bell curve. And you would see 68% of the people right down the middle of that, majority of the people, we call that normal, one standard deviation above or below. Mm-hmm. Then you have about 12% or 16% in the second range. This is like slightly better vision, slightly worse vision. Mm-hmm. Then you have this like 2.5%, which is really great vision, a really poor vision. That makes up 99.7% of the population, whether I'm measuring height, eyesight, liver values, it's that bell curve.
What's in there? Okay.
We're capturing that. So three standard deviations above, three standard deviations below is 99.7% of the population. We're capturing energy in the brain in gamma that's 200 or 300 standard deviations outside of that normal range there. So we're talking about supernatural measurements, and that person is having a very transcendental moment. Wow. So we can induce it, and we can predict it. So that's one thing.
Wow.
The second thing is our study in gene regulation. We took a group of people and we measured their gene regulation, 7,500 different genes, see if we could change their genetic expression in 4 days. At the end of 4 days, people making different choices, doing different things, having different experiences, thinking different ways and feeling different ways. At the end of 4 days, 8 genes in common amongst those people, genes to suppress cancer growth, genes for neurogenesis and regenerating of new neurons in the brain, genes to suppress oxidative stress in the body, which means you're going to heal, genes that activate stem cells to go to damaged tissues and repair them, genes that build the immune system, all in just 4 days, they upregulated genes for those type of changes. So that was a really important measurement as well.
Wow. So, okay, I have to go back here for 1 second. So I just want to talk about the impact of this. So for example, the first example that you used about how we can reach these really transcendental states, how are you influencing these things? What experiments were you doing that allow people to tap into this?
I think it's better if you just read the book, because I don't think
you sold everybody on the book.
I don't have enough time, but I will tell you this. We teach 4 types of meditation, a seated meditation, mm-hmm. a standing and walking meditation, and a laying down meditation. And I want people to be able to change their state in any one of those positions, eyes closed, eyes open. And we're taking them very, very deep, very, very deep into meditation, into these levels of what we call theta brainwave patterns, where you're in that hypnotic state where you're highly suggestible to information. And theta helps to repair genes. Theta helps to repair the body, reboot the nervous system, turn on the autonomic nervous system. So we have specific meditations that we do that are directly related to specific outcomes that we want to create. So we do it as many ways as we can, but we get people thinking differently, acting differently, and feeling differently, really. That's the bottom line.
Wow, that's incredible. And then going to the second piece of information you just shared, which was amazing as well, just in that 4-day period, what is the impact of that? What does that tell us about our potential and as human beings?
Well, I think it does 2 things. The first thing it does is I think it validates mm-hmm. what we innately know, that we can heal and we can change our future and change our destiny, that we're not doomed by our genes or hardwired to be a certain way for the rest of our lives, that we're marvels of adaptability and change, and that you don't have to be a Buddhist monk, or you don't have to be a nun with 40 years of devotion. You don't have to be a holy woman or a holy man or academic or a scholar. As a matter of fact, I think it's better off that you're not.
Yeah,
that common.
You don't have all those programs of limitation in a way. Absolutely.
And I think if you give people sound information, and science is the contemporary language of mysticism, I think science demystifies the mystical. And you combine a little quantum physics with a little neuroscience, a little neuroendocrinology, a little psychoneuroimmunology, a little epigenetics. All those sciences point the finger at possibility. That information when people begin to understand what they're doing and why, and they can assign meaning to why they're doing it, the how gets easier. So yes, we teach people the model. They have to be able to explain the model. They have to be able to repeat it, because then they're wiring it in their brain. They're installing the circuitry in their brain, priming them for the experience.
Yes.
You push those people into the experience, and you have 750 or 1,200 people in a room, and everybody's going for it at the same time. You're going to start seeing miraculous changes taking place.
Wow.
Collective consciousness. Just like an infection that spreads amongst the community and creates disease.
I think health and
wellness are as infectious as disease, given the right conditions.
That's incredible. That's a powerful statement.
So when someone stands up and says, I had cancer, I had breast cancer, I had leukemia, I had MS, I had Hashimoto's syndrome, I had a rare genetic disorder that medical science had no solution for, I had colon cancer, and then I started changing my genetic expression, I saw the research, I saw someone else do it. If they could do it, I could do it. They didn't look any different than me. And they start doing the work. And one person pierces the veil, like the 4-minute mile. And then another
belief.
You're changing the status. You're changing the current beliefs of a culture. And the importance of that is that it's not so much that I want to prove to people that it's possible. I want to validate.
Yes.
I want to validate that it's happening. I want to show people that it is in fact happening. And if people's tumors are shrinking and their cancer is going away, I can say, well, that makes sense if you ask me why, because, well, in 4 days, we saw that the gene that actually suppresses cancer was activated in our students. So it makes sense that that's possible, right?
Wow. This is incredible. Thank you. And what would you say the third most important piece of research is?
Oh, I think the third and most important research has to do with the mystical, that we have latent systems in our brain and in our body that allow us to tap into a field of information that causes us to realize we're not linear beings living a linear life, that we're dimensional beings living a dimensional life. And when a person has a full-on sensory experience without their senses, it means then their inner world is more real than their outer world. And all of a sudden, that experience is going to change the circuitry in their brain and send a new emotional signature in their body. And if they've been betrayed or traumatized in the past, in one instant after that mystical moment, the past is washed away. They just get an upgrade. And the side effect of that is we've seen hearing come back. We've seen people who have had eczema on their body since they were 3 months old, completely disappear and by the next day. We've seen instantaneous biological upgrades as a result of them getting closer to that field called the unified field.
That is incredible. That is incredible. Thank you. And so one of my last two questions for you today, because I know we're running out of time, what three most important, so outside of the book, what three most important either tools or pieces of wisdom would you share with everybody who's watching?
I would say number one, your personality creates your personal reality. Your personality is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. So the present personality who's watching this show has created the present personal reality called your life, which means then if you want to create a new personal reality, a new life, you have to change your personality, which means you're going to have to start thinking about what you're thinking about and change it. You're going to have to become aware of your unconscious habits and behaviors and modify them. And then you have to look at those emotions that keep you anchored to the past and decide if those emotions belong to your future. Most people try to create a new personal reality as the same personality.
Yes.
It doesn't work. You literally have to become someone else. That's number one. Wow. Number two, I think it's important for people to realize that the hardest part about change is not making the same choice as you did the day before.
Yep.
And when you decide to change something about yourself, whether you want to change your diet or wake up early or exercise or whatever, the moment you make that choice, you're going to feel to some degree uncomfortable. That's good. That's not bad. That's actually good.
It's outside that, your comfort zone. Yeah.
You're in the unknown. Now you're out of the habit of being yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is the perfect place to create from.
Absolutely. May I add one thing really quickly in there?
Yeah.
I've heard that you can't really outwill your subconscious, right? So it's almost like you have to keep making those patterns real so that they can become like unconscious competence. Those become hardwired into there as your new normal.
And I think that the whole purpose of meditation, you know, what separates the conscious mind from the subconscious mind is the analytical mind. And the purpose of meditation is to slow your brainwaves down to get beyond your analytical mind and enter the operating system. The subconscious mind is a program. It's like a computer tape. It's a tape. Absolutely. When it's running, you can't enter it if it's running. So, mm-hmm. so you could be, my computer could have 10 programs going off, going crazy, and me trying to change it with my conscious mind be yelling at the computer. It's not going to do anything. But when I get into the operating system, then I can begin to make those changes. And so meditation is a great way to enter the operating system. So then we can reprogram it a lot easier. You can't do it with your conscious mind. You got to be conscious in your subconscious mind. Yes. And that's what meditation is about.
Yes. So that's just like,
I think the third thing really has to do with taking time for yourself and really every single day be defined by a vision of the future instead of the memories of the past. And I think most people believe in their past more than they believe in their future. I think more people are more in love with their past than they are in love with their future. And I think that most people keep telling the story of their past instead of telling the story of the future. And I think it's easier to lose your vision than to keep it. But those people who keep reviewing that vision and emotionally
keep checking back in,
what happens is that you become a scientist in your life, which is you start measuring the effects of you it caused. You start noticing your outer world changing as a result of you changing your inner world. And it doesn't matter the color of your skin, what type of food you eat, how old you are, where you're from, if you're wealthy, if you're poor, what religion you came from, none of that matters. Those are all window dressings. That we all as human beings have the capacity to do that, this, and nobody is so special to be excluded from this phenomenon.
Wow. Wow. Wow, this is some powerful stuff. Well, thank you. Those are all just incredible insights. Read your book. Oh my goodness, I can't wait to get it. And what is coming up next for you is my last question. I know people can find out more about you on, we'll have the link up at drjoedispenza.com, but what is coming up next for you that people can participate in and connect with you on?
I'm gonna be in 14 or 15 different cities before Christmas. We run events all over the world. I'll be in Barcelona tomorrow. I'll fly to Barcelona. I'm at the Kripalu Yoga Center now. We just finished a great weekend here. I'll be in London. We have a big event that might be sold out in London. And then I'm going to do an event in Croatia. Then I'll be in Santa Cruz. And then I'll be in Costa Rica. And I'll be in Austin. I'll be in Rosenheim. I'll be in Barcelona. I'll be in Rome. I'm just everywhere.
All over the place. That's incredible. And so people can go on your website and find out more about these events, participate in any online seminars you have, fly out to see you, any of that, correct?
I think, you know, the magic happens really if you come to an event. And I think you have an opportunity to be in and out of meditation the entire weekend and really begin to make some fundamental changes.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And again, your book comes out October 31st. Can't wait. Thank you so much for this interview. This is incredibly powerful, and I think it's going to really impact a lot of people.
Thank you so much for doing the work too.
Thank you. Thank you.